Want to talk a little bit about building, and I don't know very much about building. I don't know whether Pam, with the view that you've had from your front window this last little while of house after house after house going up across the road in that field, whether you'd be better qualified to talk about building than I am, really. I did work for some builders once for a week or two, but mainly I knock things down. Knocking things down is all right. It's a bit easier. There's a bit less responsibility knocking things down than building things. Big hammer drill thing. It's very good fun. But I'm not an expert on building. And so when we think about building together this morning, I want us to remember that we might not be experts on building. That we might not be experts on building up God's church. But that we're not the ones doing the building, really. And so we can relax a little and just see what we can find in Peter's words. And because, first of all, we see Peter who's doing a kind of building, because Peter is building up an amazing picture of the church with the words that he's writing, the words that Pam read. And we're going to look at Peter's picture of the church in a minute. But while he's building this picture of the church, Peter isn't the one building the church itself. He's not the one doing all of the amazing building we're going to talk about. And so we need to remember most of all that Jesus builds his church. Jesus, of course, was a carpenter, wasn't he? Like Joseph, his father. Joseph had trained him to be a carpenter. Joseph had trained him to build and to make something beautiful. And in the same way that Joseph had taught Jesus to make amazing and beautiful things out of wood, God, his father, led Jesus to build an amazing building, an amazing church, an amazing people out of all of us. And God, Jesus' father, used Jesus as the foundation for something absolutely beautiful and something absolutely amazing, which he built, which is us, which is his people, which is his church. Peter says Jesus is like a living stone. That's a funny expression, isn't it? A living stone. You and I might struggle to get our heads around that a bit, because we don't see stones as alive, do we? In the same way that we might a plant or an animal. But Jesus is a stone alive. And it's important to remember that when we're talking about Jesus, of course, we're not talking about someone who lived a long time ago in Galilee and Jerusalem, but who isn't with us in any kind of meaningful way anymore. We're talking about someone who's alive. And if Jesus is truly alive, then we who are being built together with him, we're alive too. We have the same life in us that Jesus had in him. We're like living stones. We're being built together into a house. We're being built together into a place for God to dwell. In a moment, we'll talk a bit more about that, about what the house is for. But first, let's talk about the building work. We're remembering we're not experts maybe at building. But when we build, first of all, you need some foundations to build on, don't you? And you need a stone, a cornerstone, a big stone that you can build up and around. And Peter says that Jesus is the cornerstone, and of course the whole building depends on it. Because if it isn't good and solid, then everything else falls down. If you pull it out, it all falls down. It doesn't take much imagination to see that without Jesus, the church falls down. When Gillian's dad was building bridges and all sorts of other things, I'm sure he would have looked for a nice good stone to start with, or at least his builders would. He probably told someone else to do it, didn't he? But they would have found a good solid stone to build on, not the ropiest one that they could find. And that's what we do. We build on Jesus. We don't do church without Jesus, because it doesn't work. It's like pulling the stone out from the bottom. The church won't bear the weight of
working without Jesus. It won't run every day without Jesus. We can't be God's people and doing God's work here where God has put us without Jesus as that foundation stone to build on. Christ is made the sure foundation. Christ the rock, the cornerstone. And it's interesting, two things to notice, I think, about Jesus being the cornerstone as Peter carries on making this picture of the church. First of all, that Jesus is a cornerstone who's chosen by God. Pam was reading and we heard that word a few times, chosen. Peter says, Jesus is chosen by God and precious. And then he repeats, he's quoting the Old Testament, Isaiah, Jesus is chosen and precious. And we need to remember that, don't we? You know, that Jesus is the special one, that Jesus is the one who is chosen by God and precious to God. It helps us to see really clearly how he should be special to us and precious to us as well. But along with that, more extraordinary than that, is that Peter then goes on to say the same thing about us, because we belong to Jesus. So because Jesus is chosen by God and we belong to him, then we're chosen by God too. Because Jesus is precious to God and we belong to Jesus, we are precious to God as well. I've got a big rock here, and it's one I've had a long time. Not a long time, I suppose. 10 years. 10 years goes fast sometimes, doesn't it? 10 years. And I have it in my office. It's very heavy. And I have it to remind me, for different reasons, that I am chosen by God and precious to him. Sometimes I hold it in my hands and sort of sit and pray and look at it, and it reminds me of how I am chosen by God and precious to him. And I wonder what we have, doesn't have to be a physical thing like a rock, but what we have in our minds, what we have in our hearts, you know, what we read in the Bible, for example, that helps us to remember that we are chosen by God and that we are precious to him. Peter tells us something different, kind of the opposite. He tells us that Jesus is chosen by God, that he's precious to God, but that he's rejected by people. I don't know if you've ever watched people building. Have you ever seen anyone build a dry stone wall? Have you watched that? I've seen that sometimes. Seen someone putting the stones one on top of another in a dry stone wall. Huge pile of stones and picking them. And they'll pick one up. It's not quite right. And another one. It's not quite right. And another one. They have different kinds of stones, you know, for the edges and the middle and the top and the bottom, because some of them lie flat, don't they? And some of them stand up. And, oh, no, not that one. Or might use that one. I can use that one. And then, you know, they pick some out, but that they reject others. And Peter says that, and he quotes a psalm here, he says that Jesus is like a stone that the builders rejected. Because we know lots of people did reject Jesus in his time, didn't they? God looks at Jesus and he sees what other people don't see, you know. And he uses Jesus to build the church on. And actually, just as in the time of Jesus, there were people that rejected him and looked at him and didn't see him for who he was. So now there are as well. You know, there always will be. We might talk to people about God, we might pray for people, we might tell them about church. They just might not be interested. Not everyone is interested in Jesus, is the reality. Some people do reject him, but lots of people don't, and lots of people wouldn't, given the opportunity. Lots of people want to know that they can be chosen and precious. And we do our best to reach everyone, and we reach out, and the cornerstone, of course, left on its own, just becomes that block to trip over, doesn't it? But as we're built onto it and around it, God builds us together into a spiritual house, to be a royal priesthood, offering spiritual sacrifices to God through Jesus. Because we're being built together for a purpose. When I was growing up, my granny and granddad lived in Sussex. And I remember my granddad once showing me a whole load of buildings really near their house, 4 or 5 miles away, I suppose, and that had been built for no purpose whatsoever. Follies. Have you heard of those? Things that people just build up for no good reason. And there's this one man who was called Mad Jack Fuller. And he was the one who built these, that was what they called him. And he built these follies. And he built one which was a 60-foot high needle. For no reason, like a stone needle, like you like to say. And no reason whatsoever, he just had it built. And then this other chap, the chap who built these things must have got fed up with him, mustn't he? He built him this needle. He built him a 25-foot high stone pyramid in the churchyard, so that when he died he could be buried under this 25-foot stone pyramid. And then best of all, he had a bet with someone, Mad Jack Fuller, that you could see the church spire in the next village from his house. And his friend came and said, "Yeah, all right, I'll have a bet with you." And they looked all out the windows. They just couldn't see the spire anywhere. And he lost the bet. And he thought, "I'm not going to have this again." So he had his friend, the same friend again, build him a great big spire-shaped one at the bottom of his garden, so that next time he had that bet with someone, they said, "Well, I bet you can't see." He could point out the window and say, "Yes, it is. Look there, it is over there." Building for no reason. Pointless buildings. But we are being built together as God's people for a purpose. We're to be a royal priesthood. In the Old Testament, the royals, the kings and queens and the priests, there was a sense that they were the ones who knew God best. They were the ones who God showed himself to the most. They were the ones who showed God to everyone else. Well, now we all get to be like that. We all get to be royalty. I don't know if you'd like to be royalty or not, but we get to be royalty. We all get to be like priests in the Old Testament. We all get to be ones who share God with others, who represent him. We are like God's royal family, his royal family of priests. And Peter finishes off building this picture of the church and puts a couple more amazing things on. He's talked about us being built together into a royal priesthood, and he finishes off with some other amazing words. He says we're a holy nation. Election on at the moment, isn't there? Lots of talk about what it means to be a nation. What's our nation going to look like in the future? And it's important, isn't it? The election, all of that is important. But the most important nation that any of us who follow Jesus belong to is his holy nation, the church. A holy nation, God's special possession, something so valuable that belongs to God. You know, if we belong to God and we're treasured by him, he'll always take care of us. And if we belong to him, then we have a responsibility to do things for him and to be available to be used by him. To do those greater things that we heard about in the gospel reading, Jesus promising the disciples, you know, you'll do greater things even than I. We can do that if we belong to Jesus. He says we're God's people where we weren't a people before. So many people now struggle for a sense of identity and belonging. Peter says we can be God's people together. And he's made us to receive mercy, to receive all the goodness of God that we don't deserve, and made us part of his family together, and destined us to praise him because he's called us out of darkness into light. We're not lost all alone. We're going to be with Jesus forever because we believe in him. We're always going to be in his light. And he wants to build more and more people, more and more of your friends and mine, your family and neighbours, my family and neighbours, into this people, into this nation, this royal priesthood, into this building, which is not a building that we sit in, but a building that we are, his church. He's building us together. He's building us for his glory. Amen.